You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Oh my god.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, we picked up something crazy. So, yes, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, episode 13, we picked up something crazy. I saw the title and then I realised, oh, it's the story about the invisible baby.
Mm. See, I didn't know this was coming, so this took me for a bit of a loop, all right.
You're going to have, like, a story about a baby with stand powers at some point.
Well, we've already had a story about a baby with stand powers.
Yes, it's a running theme.
This is the second confirmed baby stando. So, yeah.
There's more to come in future parts. Uh-huh. In fact, possibly the alternate reality version of this baby. I don't know for sure. But...
Now, quick question. Did Araki have kids at this point or anything? Or was this his fears of becoming a father manifest as a baby who is invisible?
I don't know on that front.
All right.
It basically is Josuke is going to take Joseph to his house so Joseph can look at Josuke's mother, but he's not allowed to speak to her.
Because it only upset her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they have to take the bus because they can't get a taxi at this time of day.
Like, what time of day is it that there's no taxis?
I don't know. Very strange town.
It is a pretty weird town, that is fair.
There's a strike on that day, I don't know. Okay.
And he accidentally gets on a bus to Hokkaido.
Yeah, because he heard, we're getting on a bus. Well, it must be the next bus I see. Yes. Yeah, because he's an old doddering man.
Yeah, he still seems pretty senile and doddery at this point. So Josuke runs after the bus and manages to catch up just before it gets on the freeway. And as they're standing there, wondering what they're going to do, Joseph feels a tug on his trousers. And then his walking cane starts moving on its own. And then he can see... Can he hear something?
I think he sees the baby tracks.
Yeah, he sees the baby tracks first.
Kind of giggling and laughing. Yeah.
And Josuke thinks this is just more signs of his madness.
To be fair, they would have treated Joseph like this in any of the prior seasons.
Yeah, well, the poor old Kakumin, when he's kind of with a baby.
Yeah.
At some point here, we get the first, oh my god.
Oh my god. Series. So he's still Joseph Juster?
Yeah. Just because he were down as him.
Yeah. I think that's the sign at which point in the rest of the episode he's kind of slowly turning back into a Joseph we more recognise.
Yeah.
Blowing the cobweb. Off, you know, just gotta get back into the swing of things.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, maybe being out of action for so many years now, I know, like, anybody would, you know, like, get a bit rusty. So maybe he needs weirdness surrounding him at all times, going on adventures to keep the mind active and
he's probably barely been crazy. Fighting any stands in his retirement. Yeah.
Like, we've got to find that baby. And then he sees a dog growling at something. So he shoos it away and then picks up what it was growling. It's an invisible baby. And he's smart enough to figure out it's the baby's got a stand. And
Literally they think they grabbed a stand and he's like, no, this feels like an actual baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he figures out that it's a girl and the pair of them laugh like idiots about how you'd be able to tell a naked baby's sex.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I like the way he chases him with the stick after. It's like, dude, he's holding a baby. Don't hit him with a stick.
So they have to go and get some clothes for it so you can at least see where it is.
Yeah, and the nappy because it's just invisible crap itself.
Yes, yeah. An invisible shit in his hand. And there's a scene which I think goes on a little too long.
Yeah, way too long.
Did you know there are lots of baby products? I did not know this.
It's like, you know, we get the idea, you know, it's just like... Like he goes in to buy nappies in the bar, and it's like, well, there's more than one kind. Oh, let's buy them all. But they go to every iota of everything. And the idea is like, oh, he's so confused, he doesn't know what to do. So he's going to like waste all Josuke's money. And find out later. But like it, yeah, it just go on for. It felt like a good 5 minutes, I would say, or it was like about 2 or 3 pages in the comic, like.
Yeah, yeah, it would have run through a lot quicker. I imagine those pages would be mostly text, and that's the joke. But yeah, it doesn't really work as well.
No, this felt like we got to fill this entire episode. So. With the story,
name all the baby products you can think of. Yeah,
yeah, it was a bit interminable. So they put, and he's brought makeup as well, so they can see the baby's face, and they both agree that the baby's cute.
Yeah, Joseph is really into putting in makeup on that baby.
Well, say it's cute, but when you put the foundation on it, it's like, oh, it's actually a little unnerving.
Yeah. It's like a baby with no eyes, and you can see to the back of its head, yes. Right, like straight through it. It's like, that's not good. That's not cute.
And no hands and no feet. It's adorable.
This will make it easier to find the mother. How? How will this help?
Then he gets agitated and starts making other things invisible. It starts fading, and Joseph's hands disappear. They put it in the pram. It starts making the pram disappear.
Partially invisible, yeah.
Yeah, a guy walks, cycles past, and he's going to clean up that junk they've left there.
And he flicks his cigarette butt into it.
Yeah. And Joseph goes, no, the baby! Leaps, stops the cigarette butt, but then knocks the pram down the hill.
I did like the way he caught it with his robot hand.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that would be ideally the hand you want to catch a lit cigarette with. Yeah, and the baby starts turning random things invisible around it. That's a pretty good visual, actually. Yeah.
It gets more stressed, and it's like, you know, it can erase in like the surrounding environment, the ground. It's a little bit like when the ice was like on the rampage, and like boring holes like the landscape. It's a little bit like that, but, you know, not as deadly.
Yeah,
it's a nice shot of, like, it's gone through the trees and left this weird, warped path.
Yeah. And it's cut a bit out of the ground as well, and Josuke is standing on invisible grass, I guess.
Yeah. And he's also telling his dad off, being useless.
Yeah.
And the baby falls in a pond.
And initially, Josuke dives in. He's really getting really mad at Joseph, kind of looking back at him. Going like, ah, you stay out of this, old man. You're nothing but a bumbling old fool, kind of thing.
Left me and my mom, you know, to defend for ourselves, you know, and he's just so irresponsible. He's always causing trouble. God dang it. And
obviously you can't find the baby in the pond because water is invisible.
So Joseph does the sensible thing and slits his wrist open.
I can't live with myself anymore.
I got a plan.
it's a crazy Joseph plan. Like, and as Josuke correctly says, no one would have thought to do that because most people's plans aren't crazy. Like,
well,
Joseph.
See, that's just a regular plan for him.
Yeah, know? Yeah, that's just, yeah. That, like you say, coming back to the old Joseph just there we know and love.
You couldn't have just, I don't know, like, you know, need to go for a risk. You couldn't just, like, you know, just cut like the palm of your good hand. I would have done it.
Lots of blood and now.
Okay. Whatever you say, Grandpa.
And so Josuke figures out where the blood isn't in the pond must be where the baby is.
And
gets Crazy Diamond to pull the baby out of the pond and then, presumably off screen, stop his dad from dying.
No, he's dead.
That's pretty much it. He goes home and... what does he say at the end that we get a cut to the other guys with?
He's looking at the bill that was on
his credit
card.
The bill, yes.
Because Joseph didn't understand the conversion rate. I think he spent like $1,000 or something, didn't he?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like by modern standards or something.
I think like a rough estimate for like the yen is just to knock off the last 2 zeros and you get their rough dollar amount. So like, yeah, $1,300 baby paraphernalia.
Only thing I forgot to mention at the start of the episode is they've recovered the bow and arrow.
Mm. Yeah, it was just in your man's house, and he's going to be in prison, and he's totally not going to use his stand again, you guys.
Yeah,
it's probably fine.
Or George is going to fuck him up.
Oh, and the other thing is we get a glimpse of a manga author selling his latest work.
Hmm, who could this be? We might find out in the next episode.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, this was a fine episode, apart from that bit which went too long in the
It was a fine sequence to kind of show that he's in over his head and he's going like, just buy the rest of it. Just give me one of everything. You know, it's like, yeah, we get it. We get the joke. He's spending all of his money. But yeah, it went on too long. Other than that, it was pretty good.
Yeah. At the little bit at the end, but you know, we guess at the credit card bill, you know, it's or the receipt rather. It was reminding me a bit of the secret ending I have in my head for Star Wars Crusaders, where like the Speedway Competition CEO is like the expenses bill for this expedition to kill Dio. I was like, what's this?
A crash, you bought a submarine,
a destroyed submarine, Joe Star.
Yeah,
woo, whoop.
Just sort of zooms in on his face.
You just not know what money is. Also, it's probably fine, Josuke. Let's ask. He's your dad. Is like a multi-millionaire. He can probably pay you back.
Yeah, get his American Traveler checks and put them into your bank account. Mm. I think it's fair. This is all his fault. This episode has a bunch of good lines. I think my favorite is like, "How did an invisible baby get out here?" Which is just like there was too many other questions on top.
You do that same thing.
I guess it's only the Stan users are drawn to each other. Excuse. Ah, dear.
Yep, yep. Okay, next up we've got Dragon Ball Super, episode 48. Hope, again, awaken in the present, Trunks. And I watched this a while ago, so I'm struggling to remember what happened. There was a bunch of stuff with Trunks and Black Goku.
I'd actually forgotten at the end of the last episode that he hadn't gone back in time yet.
No, he's kind of like fighting, he's being goaded by Black Goku, but he distracts him and uses the time machine, and Black Goku's like, where's he gone? I can't detect him anywhere.
Mm. Yeah, and he's like, you can't fly away from me in an airplane, and then the airplane like disappears. You're like, what?
And then we had the best part of the episode. The Pilaf gang apparently are now, I don't know, just at the Brief's house. I'm not sure if they're living there or...
Yeah, initially I thought it was like, why are they the only other kids in the school? And I was like, oh, wait, he's getting homeschooled. They just fucking kind of crashed his homeschooling. Trunks is homeschooling. Kid Trunks, goddammit, we're going to have to do that from now on.
And Pilaf's like the only one who can answer the questions.
Yeah, I think I did that math quick in my head and I was like, wait, I was wrong?
he was an emperor, you know, he probably needs to be... in good charge of finances. Expenses for his entire empire, so you know, you need to be good at that kind of thing.
A little over elaborate in the explanation, but yeah.
I think there's a line somewhere in this episode where Shu points out again that he'll be dead soon.
Aw, poor Shu.
Due to the life expectancy of a dog.
He's fine. He's got the age of everybody else. He's probably got the stuff he's got those years back.
And then Future Trunks shows up and... this is kind of the best part of the episode, is Trunks being traumatized by... at first, they think he's like an...
an illegitimate son.
Yeah, an illegitimate son. An unknown older brother.
And then they're really annoyed. It's like, what, you name both your kids Trunks? That's kind of a dick move.
So it'd be easier to tell them apart. It's less confusing this way.
To be fair, one does have purple hair, so I think that's kind of...
yeah.
The key difference.
Yeah, is it like, maybe like, sort of like, well, like when your hair can get kind of like darker or fairer as you get older, so I guess.
Yeah, it goes more blue as you get older in the, in Bulma's family.
And well, the tutor's still here, getting more and more traumatized as more and more people start showing up.
Yeah, just the randomness kind of happens around the teacher, and the Pilaf gang are like, yeah, we're kind of used to this at this stage.
Yeah.
Because they call back Vegeta and Goku and Whis and Beerus want to come along as well.
Yeah, they're just like, fuck it, it sounds like a laugh.
Yeah.
Which I love that they're just part of the gang now. It's great.
They're good. Have a quick stop off by Korn's tower with him and Yajirobe living there to get some senzu beans, and you know, they're in the middle of like limbo practice or something.
Yeah,
and that was a fucking great scene. That was probably my favorite.
Yeah, because Goku just stays. He's like, no, I've already got to go. But one thing before I go, is that fun? They both go, nope.
No, we just have to do things while we've nothing to do.
It's like you're coming in the middle of an episode of a different TV show.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see what that show's about. Is it kind of like a Seinfeld situation where they have nothing to do for weeks on end? And then it's like, and then some random person comes in, hey, can I have senzu beans to save the world? It's like, sure.
They love visitors and trainers. I like, up on top of that tower. Like, I just probably don't get a lot of things up there. So I just have to make their own fun.
Yeah.
Corn doesn't believe in TV. It's a tool of the devil, Rasta Brain. So he's not allowed.
Oh, dear.
So they give Future Trunks one of the beans, and he wakes up and he sees the man who killed his mother and possibly girlfriend. We don't know for sure.
Friend, anyway.
Yeah, friend at least. And
Cash to take her care of her.
He goes to strike Goku, and Goku, of course, just grabs his arm because he's Goku, and this is just some punk kid.
Yeah, it's like, dude, that's totally Goku. Pay attention to what's going on, but I guess he's too traumatized. Yeah. Although he seems to be given out about him killing your one rather than killing his mother. I guess because his mother's there, he's less worried about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He just flashed back to his mum getting evaporated, though, as well.
Yeah, no, I think he makes mention of it. That doesn't matter.
No, I'm looking at it now. You get that flashback there.
Okay, grand.
And then next week, it looks like Black Goku already shows up in the present, so...
fucking already?
Along. Yes.
It's crazy.
Moving along at a fair clip, which is what I'd like to see.
Good. We'll find out what the hell his deal is. Obviously not.
There's another character with those... with one of the... earrings? Yeah, yeah, in some of the publicity material. Somebody we've not seen before.
They've added what looks like one of the Kais to the opening thing, except he's green. You know, the younger Kai?
Oh, that's the guy with the earring.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
Something to do with that, maybe.
Maybe he's the supreme Kai of some bad universe.
Oh, maybe one supreme of the destroyed Kai of the future. Universes.
He must be like pretty featureless because, you know, if he fuses with Goku, combine your appearances and make a kind of, you know, a fusion to the two of you. So it must be like completely featureless.
What if it was like a bald dude who fused with Goku? So it was just the bald dude gets Goku's hair? Because, you know, Toriyama faces look very similar.
Maybe that's it. It's a guy with a tan, so Goku's a bit more tanned. Or maybe it's just Goku's personality and like, he's just so overpowering and dominant, no matter what to fuse him with, he'll be the dominant thing.
Yeah, a lot of questions with this Black Goku, Goku Black. I'm not sure what they're calling him.
Just calling him Black, really.
Yeah, but I'm glad they're keeping up the comedy as well. That's good.
And talking of keeping up the comedy, final episode of Space Patrol Luluco. Final season, final episode.
Yeah, well, it's said to be continued, so I don't know about that.
Well, yes, also because the bad guy threatens to come back in season two. And it turns out the entire series has been the secret origin of the Trigger mascot, Trigger-chan.
Yep. Who knew?
Yep.
But it makes sense, though, considering the flights off into different Trigger properties. And
Crisis on Infinite Trigger Universe,
So she faces off against the Black Holian.
Yeah.
They've got their combined Super Diamond Love.
Yeah.
The power
thing.
Of love.
I've forgotten exactly the full name of that thing. The little heart.
But it turns out he'd hidden another black hole in that scar on his forehead.
So that's why that scar wasn't from something. That's from this show.
And, so he starts fading away. So she has to, she absorbs all the love back into her and turns into Trigger-chan. Mm. Who we don't really get a full look at until the very end of the episode. But
yeah, well, she's on the gun motorbike.
Yes. Mm. But the power-up involves the actual Trigger logo making an appearance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love is a warm gun.
And then the rest of Nova appears, and he turns into a bullet, which she fires at the Black Holian.
Yeah, it was a nice little bit where a little kind of film reel of all their little memories together, and kind of just coils up and goes around the kind of the cartridge, and then loads it into the gun. Mm.
Really good looking episode, and that's one of the parts that was just like that's a nice kind of we're combining all their moments into a bullet to kill you. Yeah.
Well, to send them back into another universe.
Sure, to shoot them into a black hole.
Because he says, we'll meet again. So she's like, oh, he doesn't lie, so that means that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And apparently she's got the power to travel between universes.
She's like the alternate universe?
She's Space Dandy. She's Space Patrol Dandy, Cole Patrol Dandy, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I think everyone but her dad and ma'am get a promotion.
Dad's got a promotion as well. He's in the space pirate.
Yeah.
He's in the space piracy department now. Yeah, so Overjustice is now the head of the Space Patrol. Midori's now there, taking Overjustice's position. And Luluko is now in the...
Interdimensional Space Patrol or something. Yeah.
Codename Trigger-chan. And apparently there's like three other Trigger Girl characters who don't appear in this, so...
Oh, well, that's for the sequel series, I suppose.
Choose for each.
And then they announce Little Witch Academia TV series starting in the future.
Like a lot of bad news this week, but that was nice to hear. I did like the passing off. It's like the kind of like passing of the baton, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, like, lovely Luluko all the way through. I kind of want to go back and watch it now, knowing that just how much she is an embodiment of the studio. As to whether there's any sort of meta message in the villains.
Well, on the plus side, it wouldn't take you long to go back and watch all
that.
That's
true, yeah. But yeah, definitely worth watching. Mm, if you have not, if for some reason you've listened to us for 13 weeks talking about it.
Yes, you can watch like a season in half an hour. So pretty much you can kind of watch this all like one big long movie if you wished.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Shonen Shibe Go Go Gamachan Episode 10, A Letter from a Shibikun. Plenty of Sugao in this episode.
Yeah, this is kind of like, you know, we're getting like a little bit of, because whenever we do like a Sugao episode, it usually kind of refocuses on him, but, you know, we're getting a bit of back and forth there. We're like, you know, like, Shibi, like, he misses him. He wants to write a letter. He wants to write it back and find out how he's doing, like, genuinely. Not like, you know, just missing a story about him on TV and the news like he always does.
Yeah, he does care about his old friend, and it's kind of nice. It's like, oh, he's going to be so pleased when he gets the letter, and then it's like, oh.
He writes a letter as soon as he deals with this whole Yeti situation.
And then there's the extra bit of the episode where the ma'am is up to something.
Yes.
Ashibi's ma'am. And it's just like, what is wrong? Oh, and also Goma keeps eating square white things because they look like ice pops.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I guess in a 2D cartoon world they would.
And he keeps on squeezing himself into the letterbox. So there's like a nice mirror of the Yeti eating.
Yeah.
One letter.
And... it's a much easier problem to deal with, a tiny cute seal. The fucking Yeti.
giant, cute white Yeti. He's all right. He's pretty cute. Even when he opens his mouth, he's a bit terrifying. But, you know, he's got the little doleful eyes. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, but he's a bit too possessive of the kid.
Yeah, and don't throw biscuits at him. Yeah, Chit-Chan was a bit possessive of him as well. The pair of them were being possessive.
This Sugao-kun, you know, everyone's like clamoring for his attention.
He's such a great kid.
Yeah, like he's very thoughtful. He's very he's very good to his parents. Even though his parents are not often that good to him. But
yeah,
hey,
what the fuck? His dad did something stupid again this episode, but I can't remember.
He drew a picture to tell the Yeti.
Oh, that was
to
it,
go
yeah.
back home.
Go home.
Yeah,
go home.
You can animate it a little bit just to explain it to the Yeti a little better. And it's like, this is because you can't draw, honey. I don't think it was that. Yes. I think my drawing was great.
He's in a home. He's in theirs now.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I enjoy this episode a lot.
I enjoy any Sugao-kun related
pretty much. Those tend to be the ones I like better anyway.
Yeah,
I think we've seen everyone in the credits now as well.
We still haven't seen that gym teacher. Oh, no, wait, we did.
Yes, he was at the...
at the aquarium. Yeah. You're right.
Does the guy in the brown suit who probably works at Granddad's company, have you seen him yet?
Well, maybe not.
I think I remember seeing that guy before.
Yeah.
Unless he was like a random guy in a meeting before.
Yeah, if he was just in the office at some point.
He was like a guy who would have lines.
Well, he might be one of the ones suggesting names for the foreign woman. Have to go back and check if I felt it was necessary, which I don't.
let's not and say we did.
Bungo Stray Dogs.
That is a season finale for now.
Born back ceaselessly into the past, in which we meet the new villain, who's one of these guys who watches The Great Gatsby and posts pictures of Leonardo DiCaprio on his Facebook page.
Gets entirely the wrong point of that book.
Yeah. Well, this guy's a villain, so him taking the wrong point is probably okay.
But he is like the most annoying quota of The Great Gatsby.
Yeah. Shows up with a suitcase full of money and a fancy watch and thinks he can do whatever he wants.
And what he wants is their license. The agency's license to use superpowers in the city. And the president's not having it. So this F. Scott Fitzgerald, he's even got his own theme tune, which supersedes the president's theme tune.
I know, I was so annoyed. I didn't get to hear his rock fucking theme tune. Oh, man.
What we were cheated out of, apparently, is in the comic, when he's first introduced, there's a scene with the other two leaders of the guild. Apparently there's like three groups. Yeah. One's Russian authors, one's British authors, and one's American authors.
Right.
Ooh, who's ahead of the Russian?
I think it's Dostoevsky.
Dostoevsky, yeah.
And it's Agatha Christie's in charge of the
British.
well, if like a lot of these like stories and cases involve, you know, mysteries, and it makes sense that she'd be ahead of that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they've appeared beyond that in the comic, so maybe that's why they were left out as a future surprise. I assume once they've beaten all the American ones, they'll move on to one of the other ones. But this episode, we get... is it Lucy Maud Montgomery?
That's her. Yes. Anna Green Gables.
Yes. Anna Green Gables reimagined as an enemy stand.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, that's basically what Darby Jr. It was kind of like nearly his shtick. Take him into a weird pink world.
All you do is win the game, or else I get your soul. Or what, to seal you away in this room forever, or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, so she's been kidnapping members of the agency, and...
The first one she takes out is your man from last week.
Kenji. That was really, you know, that was a good way to kind of set up, like, how threatening these guys are.
Exactly. Because,
you know, he's showing them out, he brings them down the list of ones, and like, them... Lucy M was like, oh, it's a very nice hat. Where did you get them? Oh, thanks very much. Lift door closes. Then lift doors open. She's wearing the hat. Kenji is gone. And it's like, holy fuck. Because I know Kenji is like the Incredible Hulk. You know, what the fuck are these guys at that they can take him out so easily?
Yeah. Really good way to set up the kind of threat of her, all right?
Atsushi and Tanizaki get sent to investigate. And they're at a crossing, and Tanizaki disappears, and he spots Lucy, and he gets pulled in. There's also this man who's looking for...
Well, a whole load of people get in, but the guy who's wandering around looking for some little girl.
Elise, very loudly. He's saying.
Yeah, that's it.
And they end up in this room. The background characters all flee. Apparently, if you just flee, you just forget memories of this place.
Yeah, because when they look out, there's like two doors in the room. One leads to the street that they were taken from, and time is like frozen there. So it's like, yeah, if you leave, you just end up where you were, but you won't remember being here. And what was the other thing? If you stay, you can help get the people out of the other room?
Yes, if you can get this key and open the door, you can get the people back out.
Yeah.
But it was all a trick.
Like, is this anything like the book?
What, Anna Green Gables?
I mean, like, maybe like really stretched or something.
It's not the first episode of the anime, maybe. None of this, isn't it? No.
She's an orphan though, so because she's another one who's like a match for Atsushi.
Again, comparing that kind of background thing,
yeah, because she feels she can't fail, otherwise they'll cast her aside.
And she seems to be really bitter that he got captured and they all came to rescue him.
Yeah. Mm. And Tanizaki appears to get captured, but does he, or does he get captured and create the illusion?
I think as soon as he got grabbed, he created the illusion.
Okay, yeah.
Was the what they were saying. Like, he created an illusion of a door. Like, he got pulled into the door, but what we were seeing in the room wasn't the room.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Like, thinking faster, and, you know, I don't know if they came up with this plan beforehand, or just kind of just like put it together on the fly, and then just kind of cop what was really going on, and then worked something out towards it.
Yeah, and he's about to flee when this other guy, who hasn't been taking part in the fight,
the guy in the old lab coat.
Yeah, says, if you leave, you'll forget what's happened here. So your only choice is to attack head on.
Mm.
And so he does, and he manages to quite cleverly force her into releasing everybody.
He gets caught, but he grabs her and says, okay, if you don't release us now, you're going to be trapped in here forever too, because you know the game is rigged.
Yeah, and
that kind of way.
And even though you own the power, if you're behind the door, you won't be able to undo it. So we'll all be doing it. Like we'll take you out, but you won't be your boss. We're not getting out of it either. So
again, that was ballsy and smart, and just going like, I'm going to let go now.
I'm letting go now. So you got the split second before the door closes to make your choice.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
At which point does the guy make it like a display of power?
It's when it seems like as soon as she has been taken into the door, and it's like, that's okay, it, now yeah. for you, my yeah, friend. And it's yeah. like, okay, come on, get me. And it's like, oh my god, this guy. I like even even like my even my Stan is afraid. I can't even go near him.
Yeah, it's just before it seems so that he's already gone into the door, but he hasn't because it's an illusion. Hmm.
Yeah, and after they're all set free, we discover the girl he was trying to get is the girl from the Port Mafia.
Mm. Yeah,
it set it up nicely. It gave you enough things to figure it out. He was the head of the Port Mafia.
Well, when I first talked to him, he shows him a photo, and it's the photo of like that girl who was like doing the creepy crayon.
Even though it's sepia toned and it's old and stuff, it's like, yeah, I can tell that's that girl.
What other characters in this show have like the sausage curls, you know, cascading down the side of their head? Not fun. It's that girl. So this guy's obviously, you know, the head Port Mafia guy, and we don't want to find out until later.
It was really nice though, because his design was so plain, except in the face, where there was enough like detail going on to show that this guy is a main character. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Elise calls him by it's the name of the guy from Steins Gate.
Oh, real, shit.
Yeah, it's an in-joke, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think when I looked that up, I
probably because of how he's dressed.
Right.
So are we counting, like, visual novels here now as well?
No, because we get his real name, don't we, later on.
Mm. Oh, okay.
I'm trying to remember his name at the end.
Ogai Mori.
Mm.
Ogai Mori is the name.
Okay.
And his power is Vetus Sexualis. But we don't know what it does.
Yeah.
Except it's scared. Lucy. But also, he's scared. What's that? Kyoka. She's there, happy to see Atsushi and everyone else free. And then Atsushi's having this pleasant conversation.
He's like, hey, thanks for giving me that advice, mister. No problem, kid. Well, I'll see you around.
And okay, you kind of see Kyoka's hand gripping his arm tighter and tighter and tighter. Then we see her face of absolute terror.
Yeah, she's freaking out. Well, since he's, you know, the guy who fucked with her so badly. Yeah.
And he wanders off to meet the other guys from the Port Mafia who have killed the other agent of the guild who didn't...
Yeah, initially I was thinking, is that F. Scott Fitzgerald? I've forgotten what he was wearing at the start of the episode.
The unnamed guy.
No, it's the other guy. Stephen King, wherever he was.
He's there to represent how pissed off the Port Mafia are at the guild.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's all out war now between...
Yeah, I mean, they're acting like, oh, like, no, the Port Mafia, you know, they're far below the guild. You know, we made a whole headquarters or whatever, like, I disappear overnight to send a message to the agency that we mean business. But no, they're not to be fucked with, no.
Fitzgerald landing in the helicopter reminded me of so many games of Grand Theft Auto.
Just land in the middle of the freeway, sure. Oh, dear.
But yeah, really enjoyed this first season and this episode.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, it can maybe in the opening few episodes, I was thinking, this show is okay, but I wasn't sure if it was going to, like, you know, kind of really grab you on the line. But then it did, and this guy kind of got better and better.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, like, even when, like, characters like, what's the suicidal guy called again? Daisai?
Yeah.
Like, even though he has, like, a very minor moment in this, it's still, like, he gets his little comedy moments and that kind of thing. Like, it really makes you like the characters. And it's weird because it keeps presenting, like, these, oh, this is a deadly threat. And then it kind of, like, just completely washes that away for the sake of comedy sometimes. I like that. It has, like, a really good balance of it, you know?
Yeah. I feel like in my side, that middle bit there with a two-part story about, like, Doppo and, you know, and his background a bit. But
yeah, that one was a bit heavy, I think.
It came back up from that. Gave us, you know, were tiger punching and mafia gang wars and hulking out in the streets and bitten guys. It was pretty good.
Mm.
Yeah. Did the job of me wanting to read the comic, so.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think it's translated, so I should have to wait till winter. No, autumn. I think autumn. Yeah, autumn it comes back.
Okay.
Hooray!
Righty-ho. Next up on my list is what we've got here. Tonkatsu DJ, episode 11. The launch of Lard City.
Which is all an excellent and a terrible...
Well, setup, rather. Launches next episode, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Agitaro's kind of disappointed that DJ Oily seems to lack ambition and people aren't appreciating him how they should.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you don't need to do the opening set. You could do whatever set you want. You're amazing.
And so Oily thinks about it, Agitaro thinks about it, and they both come to the same conclusion. Let's start our own night.
Let's do our own regular kind of
monthly. Yeah. It's like a monthly gig is what they're going to do.
Mm.
And so they get this old building, which is owned by the same club. It's where the club used to be. And they get all their friends together to clean it out. And Agitaro decides that he's going to invite everybody of his generation to be on the bill. Even the hip hop guy who was trying to sabotage him last episode.
Sabotage him? What are you talking about? That guy helped him out. I don't know what
gets him and all of the Ikebukuro crew to come down. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, they're all up for it, except for obviously that guy who all his friends are just like, "What are you talking about, dude? We could totally do that."
Yeah, like kind of is he like taking something off when he's going around there because you know when Agitaro became negotiator Agitaro and I couldn't.
Yes.
Yugo the negotiator?
Is that it? Okay, because I
think there's other negotiator shows though, manga though.
I looked up Yugo the Negotiator, and that's the one I thought first. But then looking at it, I thought, is this quite similar to it? I wasn't really going to quite make the connection right there, but I seem like a much older property. But
yeah, what was the comic?
Maybe it was.
Because I think it might be one of these things where the series did. Yeah, so it might be an older one.
I think a TV series I kind of thought that looked fairly more modern in its designs.
Yeah, it looks like the comic is as well. So I don't think it is that. Yeah, I think it might be something else. I've got a nagging feeling in my brain, but I think I'm mistaking it with one of these Lone Sharp mangas, which got a live-action series.
I mean, again, I was just thinking Agitaro turned into, like, a Galgo 13-esque guy with his cool jacket, and he's like, I'm going to sweep my class negotiating skills. I'm just going to fucking... But he's just really nice about everything he does. I thought it was really great.
It's like the design.
Can you do that night? Yeah. I don't think I can do that night. And it's like, I mean, are you sure? Because I don't want you to go out of your way. It's like, no, I should be able to make it. Okay, good negotiation. It's just like, no, you're just.
We have come to terms.
Ah, dear.
Yeah, it's going to book me now. Because I'm sure I've seen the thing it's based on. I was just thinking Yugo, because that's the thing I knew which got negotiator in the title. But
I looked up negotiator on various like in encyclopedia and other sites like that, and there's that and one other thing that's got negotiator in the name. So unless it's like negotiator is like the Japanese name, and it's just a more sensitive thing. Because the designs look like it's always probably from the 70s, if I'm going to have a guess.
Or it's from one of those 90s things that, like a men's comic from the 90s where they're still hanging on to that character design.
Right. Yeah. If it's from something that obscure, you're probably not going to pick it.
That's probably research for next week rather than doing it on the podcast here today. So they're basically everything's ready. And then at the very end of the episode, we see Dad watching the weather report and.
Well, falling asleep to the weather report like a proper dad.
Yeah. And there's some bad weather heading their way.
Storm is going to hit this town.
Yeah. Can they pull the night off?
Yeah, really enjoyable one this time. It's kind of nice just that it's got its own cast together now.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Yeah, all the other sons are some of my favorite characters at this point.
I know, they're so nice. They always show up to help.
They can apply their skills to anything at all, no matter what it is.
I wonder how much stuff is actually left in that karaoke bar at this point, because he keeps on bringing stuff from it.
he brought the chairs from it, he brought the fucking, the machine from it.
He was there's a cash register for the cash, you can probably use this.
Here we go. Lost Village, episode 12. Nanaki mirrors your soul.
Of course.
They did it.
It's a pretty good landing.
Come to terms.
Yeah. Pretty good landing. I'm not going into too much detail because not really that much happens in this. It kind of just.
No, they actually set themselves up pretty good the last episode.
It's like the
from
big,
all the explanation they had to do.
The big dramatic part is like the very first part. Of the episode of them,
and then it's just people talking.
Yes. Well, I'm going to stay here. It makes sense if I stay here. If I go home, I'm going to get killed. So
yeah. But I kind of like that. When they become this sort of solution or outcome. If you want to, do this, do it this way. But they're going, I think I want to stay here. If I'm going back to the real world. I didn't like my life here. I can't perform my life here, and why can't I make myself here? So I'll stay here and try and figure it out. And isn't like everybody agrees on this. It feels a bit more, I guess, strangely realistic in that. Yeah, not everybody's going to see eye to eye on this, so they can.
Yeah, and they all have different reasons for leaving or staying. So. Yeah.
And nobody's like saying, no, you have to go, and no, you have to stay. Everyone's saying, no, we'll come to a compromise. We'll just pick what's best for us. We'll catch you next time. And it's good. It's nice. It's amicable.
Yeah. I think my favorite is the tour guide who's like, well, I'm going to say if she's staying. And I was like, really? Because she's gone off with that dude. He's like, I'll leave. So fuck it. He's just like, I don't care.
I really thought Anger Man would be the first to leave.
I know.
What's stay? Who knew?
Yeah. He has his own reasons for staying, that kind of way.
Yeah, because basically the crux of it is that it was all a plot by Koa Run, the folklorist character. She's the daughter of the scientist who'd prematurely aged after coming back from the village. And so she was doing this to try and find his...
if she met a big enough monster, she could find his one? That kind of way?
As I was saying that, I just found something I've been looking for all week, so... It's stuck down the back of the cushions.
My dignity.
Yeah. No, it's.
Is it like a weird monster that abstractly represents your fear?
No, it's my portable USB charger.
Are you sure?
I think so.
Okay.
Let me just check. No.
Leaking. The last place you look while you're recording a podcast.
I mean, if you plug it into the computer and then there's like a weird face just going like on the computer, it's probably an
animal. It's an eyeball on it. Oh. My fear of my phone and DS being uncharged is still much unease.
Dear.
And then they all sing the hippo song on the way back, as it in
yeah,
the
that weird ass hippo song.
Are you surprised by the ending? People who were begrudgingly going through it.
I'm still seeing things. Well, say a podcast put up just today, in fact, on a major news network, still has a little. Maybe it's just to kind of grab the eyeballs here, but it's there's a little thing in their synopsis for a podcast saying, "Well, the last few is supposed to be funny," and it's like you're still on that point, aren't you? You still can't get past that, can you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I can't really say like I enjoyed it as much as you did, Brian. But yeah, I can definitely agree that they had a plan with it. And...
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I wasn't enjoying it that much at the begin with because I was one of those people who was like, oh, this looks like a horror. I'm expecting horror. Where's the horror? And then it slowly grew on me as to what they were actually doing.
Well, yeah, if you spend too long trying to get to your point, and if you kind of advertise it one way to people, and you're not getting that. You can see how that would throw off a lot of people.
But I don't think they were ever advertising it as a horror. I think that was just people reading that in.
Yeah, they could have been just picking it up that way.
The nature of what appeared to be the setup.
Right, right.
I'm sure he's aware of it because he's a horror-loving madman.
Well, it's filled with monsters, so...
It is, yes. You get the monsters as well.
Yeah. And, you know, overall, did anybody get killed?
No, nobody died.
No,
at all.
No. Well, yeah, presumably the old guy's going to die from premature old age at some point, but not anytime soon.
He's fine with that.
He's like, yeah, he still is.
Yeah, that's grand. I want to learn more about the village. I want to find out more about us. So if this is what I got to do, then I'll do this.
He now has the bird's eye view of human behavior, as he says.
This is so good for my research, which no one will listen to.
Just everybody's cool. Everybody's like, you know, come to terms and accepted who or what they are. It's nice. It's closure. It's a closed loop. There's nothing left over.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
That's often rare to get in a TV series these days. So I'll take whatever I can get.
Yeah, sure.
And what was the other thing I was going to say? The only dead person is the daughter, and she was dead.
Yeah, she was dead at the start.
Before the show started.
And also the driver, who still has no fucking name. And I like the way he has to drive them home. He's like, okay, you're going to talk to my boss, right? he's come to terms with that as well. So,
good stuff. If you're listening to this and you haven't heard the earlier episodes where we spoil everything,
yep,
go back through.
Why would you listen to this one first?
They may like invisible babies.
They love invisible babies.
Oh, that's true. I hadn't thought about that.
Large city. To up Lard City in a restaurant, they accidentally stumbled upon this baby phone and said, okay, well, I'll wait for my order from Lard City to arrive and listen to this podcast and see what's going on.
Yeah. Of course, we should mention it's called Lard City because they see the city as blocks of lard.
Well, also, he's the Trunkatsu DJ and he's DJ Oily.
Yes.
And going back to that, he's like, hey, would you like a lump of lard? And he's like, no, thanks, I'm fine, man. You know, he has them in his pocket. Yeah. That's so
he's
gross.
Drinking out of a bottle of oil earlier on as well.
He's just horrible.
Put it into the eyeball, I guess into the blood faster.
Oh, and we get another, what's it, cool chill out.
Oh, yeah.
sorry, backwards.
A place where there was no chilling out is episode 12 of My Hero Academia.
You're good at these segues.
Called All Might. And boy, I have to say, the timing of this anime adaptation and what's going on in the comic has been pretty great. They sync up.
Is it on purpose?
I don't know. It's pretty wonderful because things which are happening in this arc, which is obviously going to wrap up in this season are like really playing out now in the comic, or have just played out in the comic.
If they are fucking timing it like that, that does seem amazing and really good.
Yeah, I suspect it's just happy coincidence.
Okay.
Well, honestly, it'd be good if I guess people might be able to subscribe to that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Just get right in. Good.
Though I'd recommend, if you're going to jump right in on any Shonen Jump thing at the moment, Black Clover's the one to go for. I think that's better than My Hero Academia. They're both pretty good, but I like Black Clover more. But this episode, yes, All Might kicks everybody's ass.
Yep. And how?
Even the, you know, organism that's grown in a lab is designed to defeat him.
With
the power of all, there's everything, all these kind of playground things you would make up. It's like, I have the power, same powers as you, and also it's better than you. I have the power to stop all your powers. So,
yes. Yeah, so All Might's solution is just to punch him even harder than he normally does.
I mean, he does get a hand initially when the villains are kind of like, you know, double teaming him with the.
Portals.
I was going to call him the black hole guy, but that's from Ludico, the portal guy.
Yeah,
yeah, that was actually a pretty good use of it as well. So the dude could flip around and grab him.
But the kids come in and give him a hand. though not Deku. He tries, but then the other guys show up and sort of say, get out of the way.
Yeah, you get very much so the look from him again that you had in that prior episode where he sees, like, this shit is so out of his league right now.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. But he's also filled with fear because, you know, everyone's happy. Like, oh, Midas here, hooray, he's going to save us all. But it's like, I know anyone who knows that he is probably going to, like, run out of juice in about 3 minutes because I also like, watch the news and I know he's been doing hero stuff all morning and he's arriving at this. He's got to be, like, near the end of his limit now. But...
Yeah, Bakugo leaps on the warp guy because he's figured out his power. Again, this is like how Bakugo seems like he's going berserk, but actually he's
logically figuring it out
at the same time.
Oh, fucking great character. And it'd be so easy just to have him be the angry fucking bully guy, but
yeah. And we get the guy with the ice and fire powers showing just how powerful he is as he freezes off two limbs from the Nomu.
Oh, man.
And then the kid who can harden his skin's there as well, isn't he?
He's not really doing anything.
He's just going outside, let's go for it. Check it out. Ka-ching! Doing his, like, you know, rock hand, karate chop motion. Come on! I'm here, coach, I'm ready.
I like that guy, but yeah, he's yet to kind of do much.
Check it out. Rock!
Anything else happens? I think the... Your fella makes another gaming metaphor at some point.
It's like when All Might, you know, pulls out, no fun. I gotta punch you like this hard on every day, you know, that I would normally. It's like, oh, you're cheating, or you're supposed to be like this strong, and now you're putting this guy a cheat code, and you're going strong.
Does he say another thing when All Might, like, rescues the kids and pulls the hand off his face?
Yeah. Well, he's just, things he's saying are revealing what his motivations are. He's like, you know, he's going like, Father, I failed you. So obviously he's doing something like this, something in his past that All Might was involved in. He wants revenge, blah, blah, blah. We assume.
Or if you're in the comics, you know.
Yeah.
At this point.
And also you get that fucking amazing sequence where All Might decides to go, oh, so you're as strong as me, but you absorb all my punches. I'll just punch you more.
Well, you said shock absorption, not shock nullification. So if I hit you enough, it's going to, like, you know,
there's
wear
an upper limit of how much you can do. Sure.
You're just built to take 100% of my punches. So if I give you 110%.
A very All Might solution. Yeah.
He just goes fucking aura, basically on that guy for a good 2 or 3 minutes, is knocking him every which way around that dome.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is a beautiful sequence.
Yeah, but then he says in his younger days he'd been able to take care of it in 5 punches.
I had to do 100 this time. I'm really slipping.
But I think the real point of it is sort of how the kids look at him and how he's viewed as a hero.
Yeah, it's actually, we've just kind of been told how great All Might is at this rate. This is the first time we get to experience it from their eyes kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And from our own, just watching him be fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think it first mentioning how boss he is when he comes in initially, and like he's wearing like his big mustard teacher shoes, jacket's off. Loosens the tie, sleeves rolled up. He's gonna like just get down to business here.
Dude, he didn't even loosen the tie. He just tore it straight off his neck. That was fucking awesome. Good stuff.
The final thing today, the other superhero show, another show wrapping up. Concrete Revolution, last song, episode 24. Can you still sing?
Yes.
So, yeah, everything goes down in this episode. But at the start, we're already in 1978.
Mm. So we've done another time skip ahead.
Yes.
And we know that, well, obviously Faroda's fine. He's already dead.
Well, he's basically a ghost.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what could they do to him? I'm not even sure. And he's kind of, like, no one can see him on the street, isn't it?
Yeah.
Except for maybe a dog or a baby or something, I think it was. Yeah.
And Kiko, who shows.
Yeah.
And then we flash back to 1976, and we see these superheroes going after Monster Island. We learn about Jiro's plan is to was just to become a threat, so the rest of the world would like superheroes again.
Yep. That was really interesting, because he's really playing up the villain here. And I was like, it wasn't so much the last episode, but this one, as he was talking, I was like, you're playing a villain right now, aren't you? It's like, I will destroy you all, you know, kind of thing. It's just like, doesn't sound right.
He goes berserk, and he sort of becomes King Ghidorah and Mazinger at the same time.
Fucking awesome.
So it wasn't quite full of Agnes ending that they wound up doing, more like Code Gesh ending, if anything.
If I can't be a Godzilla, I'll be a King Ghidorah.
Takes care of Mechagodzilla. Your man's rescued by his boy detectives, who we've not seen all season.
Yeah, they just show up as like, we have a mission to save you. Okay, that's enough explanation, I guess.
The cartoon guys show up.
Hey, the cartoon fucking animals. I'm glad they're okay.
The Bat with No Name the Sword King.
Anything else happened? There's the Red Jaguars combined to make giant Red Jaguars.
What was that off again?
It looks like the Gunbuster 2. Is there like an older team that's referring to then? It must be.
Probably.
There's some combining thing, and I couldn't think of what the hell it was. Like thousands of, I guess, human enough-sized robots combining to,
The Magic Family show up there on the side of the yokai.
Yeah, they're actually... I love that fucking nerve center control room that there's all random monsters at the stage.
Yeah,
at the
bridge.
That was great.
Kiko's powered up because...
Everyone's believing in her. Everyone loves her.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah,
and we get return.
I forgot
of that.
That's how power works.
Yeah, the cleavage shot from the very first episode returns. This episode.
Once we find out that he has hands, he just doesn't often use them.
Yes,
I had hands, you fool.
Joe, I am undone.
Amy's got the tiger. And she puts it in her eyes.
It's living in the hole in her eye.
Yeah, she gets
in her
tiger
eye,
powers.
In her yeah.
Our second were tiger of the week.
That's true.
I can't remember all the order this happens in. We get Satobi's origin, which is that he's like Jiro, but rather than a nuclear bomb, he absorbed a meteor.
No, he is a meteor.
I think he was the Tunguska
explorer. That's what I figured he would be, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was K2, K3?
Oh, the one that killed dinosaurs.
Yeah, you're right. He was the Tunguska one. Because I think he said he hit... did he say he hit Russia? I can't remember.
I figured it would be.
That's the most kind of, we'll say, highest profile, mysterious, Earth impact that happened in the 20th century. So it would sync up that, and he'd be old enough to grow up and fight in the war and then be considered an old man now, even though he doesn't look old at all. But I suppose
he's taking control of his powers to keep himself this way. He completely dissolves the ninja guy with his...
Yeah,
the ninja's just like, bye ninja, forgot about you.
Turns out Jaguar had a plan as well. He was overloading.
Jaguar was also playing a villain, kind of.
Yes, he was basically overloading the present with technology that it shouldn't have.
So it creates such a time paradox that it would have to wipe itself out.
Yes, and so everything, all the destruction that his Red Jaguars have caused, suddenly gets undone.
That's a really nice way of going. Like, why the hell did Jaguar go off the rails? It's like, he went so off the rails as to stop himself.
Yeah.
That's fucking brilliant.
So thinking of that now, so maybe Red Jaguars are fucking Dive Buster, because that'd be like, a team that happens like way in the future, like in 2003 or whatever, that show came out. So maybe it is.
I guess he is from the future. He didn't say that's a good point.
Yeah, Amy's like, come on, Jiro, let's go. Let's go to this other universe.
They still want to open up the portal to the other.
Yeah, so Satomi kills the Fumers. Jiro kills Satomi. They use
him. I think Emi kills. Kiko kills him because she does that teleport thing and he ends up in one of those batteries.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. And then they use him as the portal. Because apparently he's got, and they're like worried about Jiro sort of discombobulating. And he decides to stay in this strange gaseous form that is spread across the universe, the world.
Like, has he just irradiated the entire planet? Because that's what I was thinking.
He's become, I guess, the potential energy for nuclear power?
Possibly. Yeah, kind of. I mean, like, nuclear power and or superheroes, so...
Yes, I mean, it seems to be superheroes.
Since he seeded the world, it seems to be like there will be new heroes who are inspired by him, whether they be inspired by manga or inspired by actual just beating up some guy who's beating up someone in an alley.
Those three kids, have we seen them? Is that...
I feel like we have, but I couldn't figure out who they were. Yeah.
So back in 78, it's like they're basically saying superheroes just seem like a memory now. We're not... almost as if they weren't real.
The fucking product placement is brilliant in this.
It is. There's like one shot of the Yamato Roman book, which is the second Roman book. There's...
You have a Star Wars cover with Raito as C-3PO. And I think it's Furuta. Is it Furuta as... R2-D2.
No, I think it's all the robots. I think it's R2-D2.
I think it was Urchin, yeah. It was either Urchin or Furuta. I couldn't tell because it's obviously stretched out. And you have S Planetarian in an Ultraman style.
Yeah, that's a particular brilliant cover of... It's like the second... It's a... I did make a note of it on Twitter.
Oh, of which volume? Yeah.
I found an article which was basically saying Star Wars Yamato and that book... which was like a history, it was like a photo history of Ultraman up to that point. Mm. And like the three corners of the triangle of otaku dumb. It's like those three things happening in the same year.
Fuck.
That's what caused otaku to exist.
Oh, man. You get to see fucking Jiro in a Cyborg 009 kind of style. That was fucking cool.
Yeah.
In a manga, I mean, like.
And then who else do we see? We see the band still around. We see Jaguar. We see...
He's like in the car on the way to work or something.
Yeah.
the guy the who... You see the producer. She's doing something. Yeah.
The guy from the... who was merged with S Planetarian obviously survived because we see him as well.
His friend.
Well, yeah, he must have survived because Jiro faked.
Yes.
Like killing him kind of thing.
Let's pretend. Yeah.
The robots are okay because the person Hideyoshi is fixing them. And
he's like an evil super scientist. that's hard to say for sure. So we'll get 8 men after.
As he's fixing them both, do you reckon he was the scientist who built Raito's body in the first place?
Right, yeah.
Judas is fixing Earth-chan.
Yeah.
Only he now seems to be almost dressed like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
he's getting more and more ostentatious in his look. All right, he gets a message from the I can't remember those two space snake people.
Yes.
Oh, Devil O and Devil A.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
The aliens
he gets it
are
through
coming.
Earth-chan. Yeah.
That were warned about by the see-through space cowboy.
Yeah, I thought, that was like a general, like, aliens are going to attack that girl. But actually, no, they're the guys from before, because you killed their space cowboy, and they come in the exact same flying saucers that we saw him come arriving.
Mm.
And then the shadow of Jiro in Godzilla form is cast over the city.
Yeah, so we're still going to have superheroes in this world is kind of the suggestion. Yeah.
Roll credits and teaser sequel we will never get.
Well, I mean, like, technically we do get the sequel because we get all the shows that came after the 70s.
The true battle begins now.
Yeah, so there's like a picture of all our heroes facing off against UFOs and Jiro's in a costume we've never seen him wear before in the entire series.
Yeah, he's in his season 3 costume, the season that's not going to happen.
It's like the giant robot part 3 that'll never happen.
So as the this was the bleak political point I thought at the end.
Okay,
of this.
Go for it.
So the idea is that if we take the superheroes as a metaphor for the new left in Japan,
right? That's a fair way to interpret them based on the show.
So is it saying that by the time 78 rolled around, like the idea of left politics in Japan is basically just a fairy tale for children now?
you could see it that way, but I mean, like, it specifically states that there's still the potential for that to happen.
But obviously, not much that has actually happened.
Sure.
Well, I think it's more something like, because, like, you know, a big theme in this season, all right, was, you know, Like you can believe in justice and peace and freedom, but you've been probably given a grown up, but sort of this kind of very childish notion of it. That you know, it's just kind of find the bad guys and beat them and all be free and happy and peaceful. But no, there's no, just that's not how reality works. I think it's about kind of, I think maybe like some of the people who are activists on this time period now, thinking if we just, you know, if everyone just kind of got along, you know, and it's like, you know, everybody just like, you know, was like, just loved each other and got along, there wouldn't be no more wars, man. But it's like, well, that's not how society, how the world works. I think it could be like more, it's more like running up against that wall of reality and funding. Like, yes, there's a possibility for this time, but you got to like try and create like within the framework or work gradually to kind of change that framework, you know. And it won't be like Superman fly out of the sky and, you know, disarm all nuclear warheads or anything like that.
Or in this universe, a Superman fly out of the sky and arm all the nuclear war. Or at least arm all the power stations.
Yeah, I think it's more hopeful in that regard. I think
the series is hopeful, but up until the point at which all the Jiro reappears at the end. And you get a glimpse of all the other superheroes lurking in the shadows.
Yeah, and a lot of the thing I'm thinking, like, is it suggesting that this kind of old idea of heroism and justice and left-wing politics is, it's kind of like we need to let that kind of go. And a lot of the things that go into the other dimension are, like, the yokai and stuff, like, really kind of old ideas. And the things that stick around are a lot of the, I mean, like, we keep some of the old ideas, but a lot of the guys who stuck around were like either just regular Joe kind of heroes or the robot kind of thing. So it's kind of like, and again, their threat's going to be aliens. It's kind of like it's more futurism. It's, we have to change our ideals in order to fit with this kind of complex gray justice, or it's a little more complicated than the childish ideals. I think that's what it's trying to say.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There's a few things going on there. Yeah,
it could have done, as I say, two more episodes would have really helped.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's fair. That's fair.
The previous one could not, because it definitely needed like unfurling out a good deal rather than this trying to cram, I'd say, 2.5 episodes worth of content.
Yeah, I think, as I said last week, we definitely needed something which compared Ultima to Amy, of being the half yokai and the half alien.
Yeah, I mean, like, we didn't really get an Amy-specific episode.
And we probably could have done with Satomi's origin and Jiro's dad's background.
Yeah, that was never expanded upon enough, really.
I would like to see, like, the professor, like, you know, and why he was doing like during the war and stuff like that. Now, I mean, maybe how he crossed paths with Satomi. Not necessarily, I don't mind Satomi's like origin being kept the way it is. You know, it's kind of a similar kind of mischievous type of thing. And he's just positioned as like if Jiro's the superhero, like, the ultimate superhero, then Satomi's the ultimate supervillain that he must be like be against. His arch nemesis, so he must like, who's like him. He's like a mirror reflecting directly back at him, which was a bit kind of blunt, but you know, I feel maybe that could have been expanded upon a little bit more to be a little less on the nose. But
I think it's supposed to be on the nose, because that's what he always believed as a kid. And then
true, what he believed was very, just very direct.
Once he acknowledges that he is a super being as well, then therefore there must be an opposite for him.
Mm.
And hey, this guy's shown up.
you'll do. I'll take you on.
I mean, there's so much that could have been expanded on, like the yokai and superhumans across the planet and stuff, because it basically goes like, right, all fiction is real. So it's kind of like the implications of that are really fucking far ranging, and it needs more than these two seasons to talk about that. But I honestly think it did a pretty good job of like of wrapping it up and also trying to talk about. Even cramming in 2.5 episodes into one episode, like it felt like it got what it needed to. It said what it needed to say.
Yeah, I feel like you know, like when they're bringing in guest writers to episodes now, which you know can like talk about things, but not necessarily kind of maybe advance the plot a bit. That might have taken away a little bit of loss as well. You know, they went to like 11 episodes in this season, so they could have done at least one, maybe two more to do.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, the super skiers, like show up in like flashes as they're flying through the sky fighting monsters in this episode. That's about all they amount to for the overall plot. I get what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you know, we had that. We're in the weeds there in the middle of it now, but there was like. 2 episodes in a row where it was like the biggest kind of plot interaction going on was like as I've mentioned before, this like the Bureau going, God damn it, Jiro, you're a maverick renegade. And it's like Jiro going, you Bureau guys are just a two of the government. Wake up, God damn it.
Yeah, that is kind of part of his development, though, that he was, kind of looking back in it later, that you kind of see where he was at that point, you know? That he was still in between as to, should I do something or just sit back and do nothing? Or should I, which side am I on, kind of thing?
But I feel like, you know, that particular point was made the first.
Yeah, we didn't need to see that several times.
Didn't need to see it again and again and again. Sure. And I feel that might have, you know, detracted a bit from time that could have been spent developing other things. For instance, any Master Ultimate or anything like that. So. But we got what we got. And
I'm
happy it is a thing.
Other thing I want to mention is, in 1978, the Comet-san, who's the main character that Kiku appears to be based on, got another live-action series, which, unfortunately, there's very little video of online because it sounds absolutely bonkers, because various Ultramen show up during it. So there's like an episode called My Friend Ultraman.
So we definitely know S Planetarian is okay.
Yes, because he's showing up in a Magical Girl story. Because Ultraman wasn't on at the time, so it was like, I don't know why they were putting it into this Magical Girl show.
Maybe that was popular and they're just trying to stick him in that as a way to increase
keep him
brand.
In the
public consciousness.
Keep pushing the brand.
Yeah,
but overall, I'm glad to have watched Concrete Revolutio. I bet it won't get a physical release in the UK.
Fuck no.
No.
Can you imagine if they tried to dub this? It's like the amount of notes that would have to pop up at any given time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've thoroughly enjoyed researching every episode and the history and that kind of thing. It's just like, that's really fun for me, but that's not most people's bag.
Yeah, like there is like a surface reading there that you can have. You can like enjoy.
The surface reading is a fun show. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and then like no, but there's so much fun you can kind of dive into there with you know, all little things, you know, and then how well it is lined up, and how even like you know, the show creators now just how well this did the homework on this thing, and like, we can do an episode on this thing now after this one because. As we advance forward further in the series, though, this thing came out, so we can kind of introduce this, and this can be a thing to use or that. And you can play a casual kind of spot a reference thing, you know, and say, oh, that's obviously, like, you know, get a robo.
Just the visual kind of thing of it.
Yeah, but you don't need to know that is get a robo or anything like that. You just need to know by what it references to the story, and then you're good to go. It's all right.
Yeah, there's a lot of levels of this. You can take it on the straight level of the in-universe kind of plot. You can take it on the level of the how the show continued its story in context of historically what was happening at the time, or just what was happening in media at the time and the kind of crossover between that if all those media existed in the same shared universe, that kind of thing. Yeah. There's really a lot of fun there.
You might need to know even a cursory knowledge of what Sazai-san is so you get the kind of the joke of that episode.
Yeah, that's fair. It's. I think the best bet is like longer running than The Simpsons and cannot kill it, is the best bet. But it definitely. If you kind of look into it, there's more to appreciate there than even there is on the surface level. And on the surface level, I think it's still a good looking show.
I would have wanted to see that third season though.
I know, it sounds really good.
Because if you think 79 was when Cyborg 009 came back on TV. 80 was when Astro Boy came back on TV.
You got some good shit in the 80s,
The aliens could be Lum. We could have Lum as the...
cool.
And then you got Return of Godzilla comes back in 84 with Return of Godzilla. So.
When you put it
you
that
know
way,
what
you
that season's going to be like.
I have to do it.
And then the fourth season... would of course be set around 99 to 2003 because you've got Godzilla 2000 in 99. You've got.
Would they have to do it like an episode where Jiro goes to America and it doesn't work out?
Yes.
Yeah.
009 comes back in 2001. Astro Boy comes back in 2003. Kamen Rider comes back in 2000. So that would be the other perfect spot if you want to do
the return of Rainbow Knight and something. Yeah, you could do that.
Yes. Plus, they'd have to position that against some kind of social upheaval, though, which I guessing was a little less of that going on. I guess you could have something about the bubble economy in the 80s and what happened there.
You could do, yes.
Yeah.
Damn aliens are going to take over our planet by causing a recession. The bastards.
Oh, yeah. It nearly writes itself.
Coming to a fanfic site near you.
That sounds a bit more Gatchaman crowds, though. Some sort of alien causing people to spend crazily.
Season 3 of that.
Yeah, I think there's more chance of a season 3 of Gatchaman crowds, to be honest.
Oh, dear.
Righty-ho, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Boy.
See ya!